Welcome to Connect the Dots, a podcast that explores today's most pressing issues and what that means for you, your family, and community. This podcast is brought to you by the Center for Progressive Reform. It is supported in part by the Arlie Sharp Fund for Climate Justice and the Center on Environment, Land, and Law at Loyola University, New Orleans.
Hi, I'm Rob Virchik. This is Connect the Dots. And for our last episode of this season, we are going to have a gab fest. Now, you might ask, how am I going to gab just with myself? But I am not. What we have decided to do is I'm inviting our very own Maggie DeWayne to come to speak with us today. Now, Maggie works at the Center for Progressive Reform. Her formal title is Senior Digital Media Manager, but you know her as the fabulous producer of Connect the Dots. Now, we have been talking this entire season about climate change action wins, different kinds of advocates, different kinds of activists who have been working in their own ways in their own parts of the country to attempt, right, to make meaningful progress toward climate action. And we've had episodes, thanks to Maggie, that have focused on individual people, on community efforts, and really importantly, on legislative efforts, in part to show that real, ordinary people are behind all of these kinds of movements, and that any of us can get involved in any way. So let me just, I see Maggie here on my screen. We are talking remotely. Maggie, where are you calling or where are you talking from?
Hey, Rob, I am just outside of Washington, D.C. right now.
Okay, you're in Washington, D.C. and it's raining. And yes. I am in Western Washington State and it's not raining. It's actually kind of, which might be surprising for people who think about Washington over here is raining a lot. Well, thanks for joining us, Maggie. My way really of, I think, just opening up on this is having listened to all of these shows and having talked with the guests, what stood out to you? Or is there a particular story? I mean, we love them all. I get that. Yeah. But is there a particular story or a particular person that that resonated with you?
Yeah. So I think that's so hard to choose one of these stories because we had five great episodes of different perspectives, different wins. But having previously worked for the government and having lived in Maine, the episode on our legislative win up in Maine with Senator Stacey Brenner and Jack Shapiro of the Natural Resources Council of Maine, that episode really resonated with me because they were able to pass some really meaningful climate legislation and get bipartisan support in doing so. And what I appreciated a lot about it was not only having lived in Maine and knowing firsthand that the energy grid up in Maine is not the greatest. And that's what they highlighted in the episode. And they knew that this was something that to achieve Maine's climate action plan needed attention. And the legislation that was passed requires utility companies to incorporate environmental considerations into their planning. And not only to that, but include environmental justice, equity assessments as well. And it's the first of its kind in the entire country. And what I really appreciated about the bipartisan nature of this was that Senator Brenner recognized climate change has become this very polarized issue, even though it shouldn't be, frankly. It affects all of us, regardless of who we are or what we believe in. But what she realized was tying the financial well-being of the state and communities to climate legislation is a really useful and tactful way of getting all parties, both parties, on board.
Yeah, I love that about her interview too, because she did. She said that a pocketbook issue, right? That's where mm-hmm. you start. She's a state senator. She knows the people in her district really well. And you know, the other thing that was interesting to me was she spoke about the different electoral districts in Maine mm-hmm. and said that each district responds in different ways mm-hmm. to different values, which is sort of your point. And you know, what was interesting to me about that was that it's really hard to, I'll use the word broadcast, an advocacy strategy, because what we really need to do in the era of climate change is to narrow cast, right? I mean, we have to think about tailored messages to different groups. Because they have different values, not because we're changing the facts or anything, but because
Agreed.
They have different values, right? And that takes a lot of time to do.
Yeah.
So I just thought she was very smart about that.
I think you've put it rather eloquently. It's just that, you know, we in the different parties that exist, we all want similar things, but our values and ways about going about getting those things differ, right? And so finding that common ground is really imperative. And I thought that it was, this legislation in Maine was a great illustration of how parties can come together and achieve meaningful, impactful legislation.
So I've got among these episodes, one example to me which resonated also had to do with finding common ground. And that was Brett Isaac, who is the founder of an energy company, the Navajo Power is what it's called. And it mm-hmm. has it develops renewable energy on tribal lands in the West. He's a member, Brett is, of the Navajo tribe. And so there were two things. So one is he brought together, I thought, this common ground between companies that are trying to develop large-scale electrical power, and they're interested in getting finance, and they're interested in constructing things quickly, and of course in making money. And Brett Isaacson's home and the Navajo Nation, they're interested in making money, but they're also interested in adhering to cultural interests and to making sure that some of the money stays in the Navajo Nation and results in the generation of generational wealth and all of these kinds of things. And so he's trying to put both of these things together. The other thing I liked about Brett was that he's from the Southwest, and that's where I grew up. I grew up in Las Vegas, and I know at least part of the area that he's talking about. And it brought back a lot of memories that, you know, about his experiences in the desert and talking about a strip mining operation on the Navajo Nation. We have lots of mining, you know, of course in Nevada as well. And the part that was interesting to me too, in the very beginning, when he says, everybody worked for these coal mines when he was growing up. He said, and people were very proud of it, as they should be. It was hard work. They earned a good living doing it. But he said what he noticed is that he never saw members of the Navajo Nation wearing suits. They were forever people working the mines and not accumulating wealth, even though they had pretty good paychecks coming in, I gather. They were not able to transform that into something that was lasting economically for the rest of the community. And so I just thought that was a really interesting insight.
Yeah, what really struck me about Brett was his innate problem-solving ability, right?
He
observed this from a young age and saw, okay, something about this isn't working. How can I affect change? And I think that's a common theme throughout the season. It's people who are observing what's happening locally and not necessarily looking at this global picture of climate crisis that we're all seeing, because not one of us can solve the global crisis, right? But we can mm-hmm. solve what's happening locally in our community, in our state. And that's how it ripples on out elsewhere and how we achieve success elsewhere, which I think is really key to what we've been trying to communicate this whole season.
Can you, if you had to, if you were put on the spot, which you're going to be, if you were put on the spot and say, well, you know, listening to these episodes and thinking about change at these different levels, community, individual, mm-hmm. and legislative, is there a through line here? Are there any lessons to be learned that can be duplicated elsewhere?
Oh, I've been thinking about this all season, Rob, because there is no guidebook to solving the climate crisis in its entirety, but rather there are different tools that can be implemented in different ways, right? So the strategy that's going to work for Maine is not necessarily going to be the same strategy that works for California. But I think there are certain themes that all of our episodes have in common. And
so, like, what's a tool? What are the tools there?
Well, maybe you'll like this. Maybe it'll resonate with you, Rob. But I think it comes down to three things that stuck out to me throughout this season.
Oh, I love it. We got a 3-point plan.
Yes, this is my 3-point plan. So the first is resourcefulness. So Caitlin, in episode 1 of this season, she talked about getting all of the stakeholders at the table, including those who didn't necessarily agree with what she was trying to achieve, and bringing in all of the different inputs and perspectives in order to achieve the Climate Solutions Now Act in Maryland, which really set Maryland ahead of climate action planning in the country. And it's really impressive. So she was resourceful and brought in all of these different voices. Then we saw Ajulo in North Carolina partnering with local groups. We focused on her community win in her episode. And I thought it was really telling that, you know, she was entering this community solar world that she knew a little bit about, but it wasn't initially her forte.
Right.
But she saw this problem and thought, okay, I'm not an expert yet, but who do I need to talk to? Who do I need to work with so that I can be, and so that we can collaborate and make this energy justice a reality? So I think resourcefulness is the first theme. The next I'm going to say is persistence. Going back to Maine, Senator Brenner had or was a part of an initiative that was vetoed by the governor. And so rather than just saying, all right, we're not going to achieve the change that we wanted, she went directly to the governor's office and said, hey, I want to partner on something that you can get behind. And this is another instance of, we want the same outcome, but we want to go about it different ways. And so she was persistent enough to follow through with, this is what I want. How do we do it? How do we work together? And then for the third theme, I think curiosity. We just referenced how Brett saw the impact of pollution growing up. He saw the impact of inequity. Ada, she is currently growing up seeing the impact of
pollution. This is Ada Crandall
of
Portland, Oregon, who now is in high school, but she was a middle school student when she first started working with an environmental justice club to lobby against a proposed freeway right next to her middle school.
Exactly. So she's currently growing up and seeing the impact of pollution, seeing the impact of transportation inequity, and she's affecting change locally. So resourcefulness, persistence, and curiosity, I think that really rounds out how we can all be drivers of change and climate actors in our own way.
You know, I'm thinking about Ada again now, because when you were talking about this persistence, and you brought her up with curiosity, when you were talking about curiosity, and I'm thinking too about her persistence. I mean, at the time, she's a middle school student, And they actually had been involved in this thing called an Environmental Justice Club at Harriet Tubman Middle School, where she went to school. And at first she said they were, if I remember it, they were working on issues against diesel fuel, and that actually didn't go anywhere. Nothing mm-hmm. happened. And so they just kept pushing forward. And the next thing you know, they're talking about the freeway, and they all thought about the freeway as a place where cars go up and down. But then she says that there's a teacher in her, I like this part, a teacher in her life, right, who said, oh, you should start thinking about how it's related to pollution, how it's related to the use of gasoline and other fossil fuels, and how it takes the place of mass transit. And all of a sudden the wheels all start turning, and the next thing you know, they're all out in front of the State Department of Transportation with signs. Mm-hmm. And she said that actually made a difference. These young kids.
You know, I was really impressed with how Ada said that though they weren't successful, she and her classmates, in stopping the legislation for the freeway expansion, or the proposed plan, I believe it was, for freeway expansion, they are shifting the narrative. Now they are invited to be part of local community and state conversations.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
Success doesn't necessarily have to be the first objective that you set aside for yourself. It can be something bigger, it can be something smaller, but none of our guests this season were discouraged by any of the setbacks or challenges that they came up against. And that's why I think, yeah, you're right, persistence absolutely spans all of our guests and how they approached their climate action. But you were also talking about some of these through lines, Rob. So I want to hear what you think are some of the themes of this season.
Well, so you know my first theme, which is always the theme of connecting dots.
Yes.
And what I love is you've got Brett Isaac, who in the very beginning is thinking, just how do we bring more wealth and economic security to where I live, right? And then that sets him on a path studying business and thinking about it through a business lens, and then saying, oh, well, this is also related to energy. This is a guy, right? He says in his family in 2016, it wasn't until 2016 that his family got running water in their house, right? Which is part of this point that I was trying to make a little earlier, in one of my rants about, we think about the rural environment and there are real disparities about that. But anyway, so he sees these connections between energy, between the fact that he didn't get running water until 2016 and economic wealth. You've got Ada Crandall sort of connecting dots again, thinking, okay, freeway, that's pollution. But then she gets on this quest toward mass transportation and climate action, right? And I think this connection, you know, that I think Stacy Brenner and Jack Shapiro in Maine, one of the things I find really interesting about that is that part of that legislation, as you mentioned, requires utilities to come up with plans that have environmental justice in them and net carbon reduction themes and so on. Now, normally it is a state commission or regulatory body that would try to hold utilities accountable in their plans. But they didn't just say, oh, well, I'm not on the commission, so that's not my job. What they did is they said, oh, there's another way of exercising some government power. So we can make sure that these plans have things in them, even if the regulatory body is not requiring that they have those things in them. And so it's a lesson, I think, there are always many points of leverage. Even if you're looking at law, there are many points of leverage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're right. Every episode, we are truly connecting the dots, and not just for our namesake, right, of this podcast. This theme came out on its own, which I think is really impressive and telling.
Tell me about this, because it seems to me that in their own ways, every one of these folks is an expert in communication. And that's why I want to ask you, because you are an expert in communication. And what do you, I'm just going to give you one thing. So when Ada Crandall, at one point she was talking about how she has to sort of speak to adults, right? And she uses the phrase, when she's talking about her parents, she uses the phrase that they're two decades ago environmentalists, right? Which means that there's something old fashioned about their environmentalism.
Right,
and so here
right.
she is, having right to make things simple for the older generations that she's talking to. But everybody's doing that. So what do you think about what role communication plays in organizing, and in particular, maybe talking about climate change?
Yeah, this is such a loaded question, Rob, right? And this really is the secret sauce to climate action, I think, is how it is communicated. And part of the reason that we wanted to feature this season on climate wins and positive stories is because the news is just wrought with negativity these days and doom and gloom. And that isn't inspiring. That's not galvanizing action. But positive stories that feel relatable, that will inspire and empower audiences. That was exactly
And it's not
what,
fake, right? We're
right.
not just picking good news stories so that you'll feel okay. We're picking good news stories because we actually think they can make a difference, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think this humanization of these positive stories by bringing these guests on who have been in the thick of things themselves, it makes it more relatable and approachable or accessible. It doesn't feel so far off and overwhelming. You know, I don't understand a whole lot about solar power, but listening to Ajulo and Brett Isaac talk about what they have done, it is more easily understandable for somebody like me who isn't an expert, but I feel knowledgeable enough now to talk about it with somebody else. And I think that knowledge share is really step one in empowerment.
Oh, I like that. You know, there's a survey that I talk about, to anybody who'll listen to me when I'm talking about climate. folks who are listening, that the Yale University has a center on climate communication, which does this wonderful
survey. Oh, it's an excellent,
survey
excellent
work.
Initiative.
Yeah, and one of the things that they have found is that 60% of the people in the United States are either concerned or alarmed about climate change. So that's a lot of people, I'm thinking, right? This is way majority, right? But in that same group, very few people actually talk to one another about climate change. They keep it stuffed inside. And they don't even talk to people who would be sympathetic, right, to their situation. I guess I'm trying to understand why that is.
Because it's scary. It's overwhelming. And I think because of how climate change is so often presented to us in this bigger, broader picture, it seems unmanageable. And breaking it down into stories is part of creating some resiliency toward the news. And I think you're an expert in that, Rob. And I'd love to hear about some of the stories that you have found in your travels and in your studies. You just came out with a book on climate resilience called The Octopus in the Parking Garage. And it really is inspiring. And it talks about this notion of empowerment and resilience in a way that I think is how we should be talking about climate action.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I have to say it was a journey, right? Because I thought a lot about how to communicate a very scary topic to a readership that would be a general readership, the people that I wanted the people that I wanted to connect with. And I said to myself very early on, you can't start out scaring people. There's a place to be scared, and scaring can be a motivation to learn more and so on. But I think we've already had that moment. And so, you know, I picked the book is called Octopus in the Parking Garage, and it's a reference to an octopus that was found in a flooded parking garage that, you know, was connected to a climate change event in Miami. And the reason I've been on tour talking about it, and I say, well, the reason I started with that story is I didn't want to start out with a story of somebody's house who got burned down during the Paradise wildfire, right? I mean, nobody wants to read about that again. As important and as, you know, as significant as those situations are. So I figure you could bring people along. And the other thing that I quickly found out was that tying different stories to particular people was really important. So there's a person, one of the people in the book, in my book, is a high school student named Cara Norman, and she's a scuba diver, and she started scuba diving in Florida because she liked Finding Nemo and mm-hmm. Little Mermaid and this sort of thing, you know, as a middle school girl.
Yeah.
And gradually she did more of that. She got really interested in science. Now she wants to be a marine scientist. And now she is working on peer review studies, and she is helping to restore coral in the areas around Key West. And now she's also, she wouldn't say it this way, but I will say she's politically active in the sense that she goes to hearings and talks before city councils about things that are important to the ocean. She would tell you she's just telling them science. She doesn't see it as being a political thing. But there are lots of people in the book that are sort of like Cara. And I have to say, I met many of these people through interviews that I did last season or seasons earlier on Connect the Dots. So some of the listeners will remember, for instance, Sam Perkins, who is a smoke jumper in one of the episodes that we did earlier on wildfires, and Cynthia Zermenio Moore, who's an activist in Nevada. So it's a real way of bringing stories together, I think.
I mean, it's really impactful, I think, and encouraging, but also reassuring. I think climate anxiety is a real thing. And these stories of people on the front lines in their own way, it's inspiring, yes, but it shows that it doesn't matter who you are, you can make a difference, no matter how big or small.
Yeah, acting is always my wife actually is a counselor, and one of the things that she has taught me over many years, right, is that you don't want to freeze up, right? If you get scared about something or you feel uncomfortable about something, you need to take some action. I sometimes say that the opposite of despair is also action, right? You know, you got to get out of your head and do something. And Ada made that point about how some of her really good friends now are people in the movement. And it's important. I guess one of the things I've been saying as I talk about my book at various events is that one of the things I noticed in researching that book and in doing my Connect the Dots work is that it's not generally true that people just wake up one morning and say, oh, I'm going to be a climate activist. I'm going to find me some friends and start a group. That's not usually how it works. Usually how it works is they're already involved in something. Maybe it's this environmental justice club, or maybe it's a group of people who are interested in business, thinking about how are they going to bring economic opportunity to their area, or, you know, maybe it's a gardening group, or maybe it's a scuba diving group. And all of a sudden they start seeing how whatever it is they're interested in is affected by climate change. And then they get together. They already have their peeps, right? Mm-hmm. They already have their people. They already have a mission. which is to help with gardening or help with scuba or help with environmental justice. And then they just go in this other direction, which I just think is much more natural and less imposing and, you know, impossible seeming, I guess, if that's a word.
No. But you've really struck a chord there, and that is making change where you are. If you see that change can be had, right? You don't have to solve all of the world's problems. Just look around what you're already doing. And if there's something that can be improved upon, you can do it. And I think
what does it for you? What does it for you? What are you interested in that we might not know?
Oh gosh. Well, I really like to get people excited about the environment and nature. And so I get excited myself when I'm on a hike and I'm finding new species of mushroom that I didn't know previously.
Oh, really?
And so
okay.
I share that on my own social media. I share that with my friends that I'm hiking with. And to me, just trying to use my own excitement to show other people why this planet is so stinking cool, I think that helps, because once people also care about any given aspect of our planet, the more likely they are to want to protect it, right?
I just want to thank you on behalf of Connect the Dots and Center for Progressive Reform for helping make this such a memorable season.
Well, thank you, Rob. I mean, this would not have been as fun without you. You really bring the passion and enthusiasm, and I'm so grateful that you and our guests were able to learn so much and dig into some new topics this season.
That's right. We want to stay inspired and we always want to have fun. So, yeah. Well, thank you very much. This is just a wonderful way to wrap up the last episode of our season. And let me just say that it's been a pleasure. And look, our listeners, I want you to make sure that you look for a new season, which will be approaching at some point. Maggie and I have already been talking about some surprises that might be coming up with that. Well, thanks very much, Maggie. It has been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Rob. This was an absolute delight.
Thanks for listening to Connect the Dots, a podcast by the Center for Progressive Reform. For more information, visit us at progressivereform.org or follow us on Instagram at Progressive Reform, all one word, or catch up with us on Twitter at CPR Blog, all one word. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and don't forget to leave us a review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you who want to connect the dots on today's most pressing issues. Our theme music is by Lobo Loco and Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Rob Virchik, and until the next time, be safe and take care of one another.